Today is Wednesday, July 28th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu for broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Biden warns of war with, quote, a major power, unquote, over cyber attacks.
But I think it's more likely we're going to end up in a war, a real shooting war, with a major power. It's going to be as a consequence of a cyber, great consequence.
Plus, UN warns that thousands of refugees are trapped in Tigray amid intense fighting.
Concerns are growing for the safety and well-being of thousands of Eritrean refugees in Mai Aini and Adi Harush camps as fighting intensifies in Tigray's Mai Sebri area.
Also, alarm over new law on foreign funding of social media in Turkey. Our top story today is in the U.S. President Joe Biden on Tuesday warned that a significant cyber attack on the United States could lead to, quote, a real shooting war, unquote, with a major power. Biden made the remarks during a visit to the office of the Director of National Intelligence in McLean, Virginia. Biden's remarks were directed primarily at Russia. Cybersecurity has risen to the top of the agenda for the Biden administration after a series of high-profile attacks on entities such as network management company SolarWinds, the Colonial Pipeline Company, meat processing company JBS, and software firm Cassia. The attacks hurt the U.S. far beyond just the companies hacked, with some affecting fuel and food supplies in parts of the United States. Biden also accused Russia of spreading disinformation about the 2022 American midterm elections, which he said was, quote, a pure violation of our sovereignty.
And I just had an interesting meeting, as you all know, with my very close friend Vladimir Putin. I can tell the one thing, I've been dealing with world leaders a long, long time. And just like all of you women and men, you can sort of sense somebody else after a while. He knows that you're better than his team, and it bothers the hell out of him. But I think it's more likely we're going to end up in a war, a real shooting war, with a major power. It's going to be as a consequence of a cyber, great consequence, and it's increasing exponentially, the capabilities. When I was with Mr. Putin, who has a real problem, he's sitting on top of an economy that has nuclear weapons and oil wells and nothing else. Nothing else. Their economy is, what, the eighth smallest in the world now? Largest in the world? He knows. He knows he's in real trouble, which makes him even more dangerous, in my view. I think we also need to take on the rampant disinformation that is making it harder and harder for people to assess the facts, be able to make decisions. In today's PDB, you all prepared. Look what Russia is doing already about the 2022 elections and misinformation. Pure violation of our sovereignty.
That's U.S. President Joe Biden. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin Tuesday discussed countering China's aggression in Southeast Asia through what he called, quote, integrated deterrence, unquote. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Barb is traveling with the secretary, who made the comments in a speech at the International Institute for Security Studies in Singapore.
A plan to beef up U.S. military capabilities and improve allies' ability to work together in order to help discourage what many see as China's bullying behavior.
Integrated deterrence also means working with partners to deter coercion and aggression across the spectrum of conflict, including in the so-called gray zone, where the rights and livelihoods of the people in Southeast Asia are coming under stress.
Austin said Beijing's claim to the majority of the South China Sea encroaches on the sovereignty and basic rights afforded to Southeast Asian nations by international law. Chinese ships are accused of harassing fishermen inside the Philippine Exclusive Economic Zone and oil and gas developers off the coast of Malaysia and Vietnam, hindering their energy development. Despite the territorial claims of other nations, China has created hundreds of hectares of artificial islands in the resource-rich sea to bolster its claims. But while local allies are happy the United States is there to help, they're worried the two great powers might cause more problems as Washington and Beijing butt heads. Murray Hybert is with the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
There's a lot of anxiety that the high-level tensions now between China and the U.S. over so many issues, from Xinjiang, Hong Kong, Taiwan, South China Sea, that they're going to get caught. And so what they don't want is to be forced to choose.
Austin said the Biden administration is not asking regional allies to choose between Washington and Beijing, noting that many regional partnerships with the U.S. are older than the Chinese Communist Party. He even held out what sounded like an olive branch to China, asking to work together in areas like climate change.
We will not flinch when our interests are threatened, yet we do not seek confrontation. So let me be clear. As Secretary, I am committed to pursuing a constructive, stable relationship with China.
Experts warn pursuing a stable relationship may be the best way to try to de-escalate tensions, which are approaching all-time highs on issues ranging from Taiwan to the South China Sea. Carla Babb, VOA News, Singapore.
U.S. lawmakers heard emotional testimony from four law enforcement officials Tuesday as a special panel met for the first time to investigate events of the January 6th attempt by Trump supporters to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports the panel will probe former President Donald Trump's role in the riot.
In the 6 months after pro-Trump supporters attacked the U.S. Capitol to overturn the results of the 2020 election, some Republicans have downplayed the severity of that day. The law officers who protected the Capitol pushing back on that Tuesday.
It was an attempted coup that was happening at the Capitol that day. And if it had been another country, the U.S. would have sent help.
Gunnell, one of four law enforcement officers testifying about being brutally beaten by the former president's supporters.
At some point during the fighting, I was dragged from the line of officers and into the crowd. I heard someone scream, "I got one." As I was swarmed by a violent mob, they ripped off my badge. They grabbed and stripped me of my radio. They seized ammunition that was secured to my body. They began to beat me with their fists and with what felt like hard metal objects.
And hurling racial slurs at African-American officers.
Then the crowd, perhaps around 20 people, joined in screaming, "Boo! Fucking nigger."
An emotional beginning to the first day of public hearings by a special panel investigating the worst attack on the U.S. Capitol in two centuries.
There's no place for politics or partisanship in this investigation. Our only charge is to follow the facts where they lead us.
But the top House Republican criticized House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's decision to remove two of his choices for the investigation.
Speaker Pelosi will only pick on people onto the committee that will ask the questions she wants asked. That becomes a failed committee and a failed report, a sham that no one can believe.
Two Republicans have defied their party to serve on the panel, including Liz Cheney, who was removed from a leadership position for her criticism of Trump. She said his exact role in inciting the riot should be investigated.
We must also know what happened every minute of that day in the White House, every phone call, every conversation, every meeting leading up to, during, and after the attack.
The panel, which has seven Democrats, will likely seek to compel testimony from top former White House aides as part of their investigation into the riot that contributed to the deaths of seven people. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
A United Nations report this week said Afghan civilian casualties soared in the first 6 months of 2021, with around 1,700 civilians killed and 3,500 others wounded. From Kabul, VOA's Rahim Gaur Sawan filed this report, narrated by Roshan Nozai.
The report said that the Taliban were responsible for 39% of the civilian casualties and the Afghan government for 23%. The Taliban have rejected the UN findings, and the Afghan government says that its armed forces were not responsible for causing civilian casualties.
We strongly reject it. Afghanistan's armed forces do not take responsibility for the civilian casualties. And fortunately, it's not done by the Afghanistan's armed forces.
As fighting intensified in the country in the recent months, thousands of people fled their homes, facing a precarious future. The United Nations says that about 270,000 people in Afghanistan have fled their homes since January, bringing the total number of displaced people in the country to 3.5 million. For Remgul Sarwan in Kabul, Afghanistan, this is Roshan Nurzai, VOA News, Washington.
Tunisia's Islamic al-Nahda party is calling President Kais Saied's suspension of parliament a coup and urging, quote, broad dialogue, unquote, while other political parties and leaders appear divided on his decision. A number of trade syndicates, including the Labour Federation, say they support the move so long as it does not last more than a month. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Tunisian state TV reported that the situation inside the country was calm Tuesday following President Kais Saied's decision Sunday to suspend parliament. It said Tunisians were largely obeying a curfew that forbids more than three people from gathering in the streets during the night. Most government institutions, with the exception of security forces, interior ministry, and customs, were also suspended for several days. The president met with political and trade union leaders to discuss his next move amid calls by some for a well-defined roadmap. The Tunisian president told a roundtable Monday night that he had been patient for a long time, but that some provocateurs were trying to destroy government institutions from within. He asked for calm and urged citizens to avoid provocations. Democracy is important, he said, but the poor have no rights. Islamist Parliament Speaker Rashid al-Ghannouchi told supporters to suspend their protest in front of Parliament to avoid bloodshed. His al-Nahda party called the president's suspension of Parliament a coup, but urged all political parties to hold a dialogue. Peter Johnson, a former U.S. diplomat who now works in Tunisia, tells VOA that he doesn't see a clear-cut answer as to whether the president's move was legal or not.
I would say it's definitely a gray area. It's not really clear black or white, because this is something that Article 80 gives him the power as commander-in-chief of the military, the power of national security, of protecting the borders, of diplomacy. However, at the same time, that same section of the Constitution talks about his power to remove certain government officials, but not to completely suspend parliament.
Johnson points out that the Constitution also gives Parliament the right to remove the president with a two-thirds vote, so the president short-circuited a major check and balance. But he argues the Tunisian public seems broadly supportive of Saied's move so far. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
This is the Voice of America. Police in Russia have raided the home of chief editor of an investigative news site that was recently designated as a, quote, foreign agent, unquote. The insider chief editor, Roman Dobrokhotov, tweeted Wednesday morning that, quote, police are knocking, unquote, on the door of his apartment. A legal aid group that monitors political arrests said the editor's wife had called the group's hotline and reported a police raid. Russia's independent media have faced increased government pressure before the country's September parliamentary election. China's foreign minister has met with a delegation of high-level Taliban officials as ties between them warm ahead of the U.S. pullout from Afghanistan. Photos posted on the ministry's website showed Wang Yi posing with senior Taliban leader Mullah Abdul Ghani Barada and his delegation then sitting down to talks. The show of friendliness had the appearance of a diplomatic mission at a time when the Taliban are craving legitimacy. Iran's supreme leader has called the U.S., quote, stubborn, unquote, installed nuclear talks in Vienna for discussing Tehran's missiles and regional influence. Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei's remarks Wednesday come as his prestige president-elect Ibrahim Raisi is set to be sworn in next week as the head of the country's civilian government.
This is Science in a Minute.
The Russian space agency Roscosmos says that their docking module, Piers, was detached from the International Space Station at 10:55 UTC on Monday, July 26. The Piers module was used by Soyuz and Progress spacecraft to dock with the ISS since 2001. The module was attached to the Russian cargo spacecraft Progress 77, which acted as a kind of towing vehicle for the module. According to Roscosmos, once the two spacecraft were at a safe distance from the space station, they were put into a controlled deorbit and were expected to burn up in the atmosphere during re-entry, with any remaining debris landing in an unoccupied area of the Pacific Ocean. The space left by peers will soon be taken by Russia's new multipurpose laboratory module. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The UN Refugee Agency warns about 24,000 Eritrean refugees trapped in two camps in northern Ethiopia's Tigray province are in great danger as fighting among armed groups escalates. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Concerns are growing for the safety and well-being of thousands of Eritrean refugees in Mai Aini and Adi Harush camps as fighting intensifies in Tigray's Mai Zebri area. The UN Refugee Agency reports aid agencies have been unable to access the camps since July 14th. It says conditions for the refugees have become increasingly dire and worrisome since then. UNHCR spokesman Baba Baluch says members of armed groups have infiltrated the camps. He says the Eritreans are living in constant fear. He says they are facing intimidation and harassment and are cut off from humanitarian assistance.
We have received disturbing and credible reports in recent days from my Eni refugee camp that at least one refugee was killed by armed elements operating inside the camp. The latest death is in addition to the killing of another refugee on 14th of July.
Baluch says he does not know which of the armed groups is responsible for the killings. However, his agency, he says, has received credible reports that people with guns are operating inside the two refugee camps. He says the UNHCR has been appealing to the local authorities and the Ethiopian Refugee Agency to provide safety for the refugees and to grant aid agencies access to the camps. He notes the Eritrean refugees have been without humanitarian assistance for the last 2 weeks.
Trapped refugees need urgent life-saving assistance. Clean drinking water is running out. No healthcare services are available, and hunger is a real danger. The last food distribution to both refugee camps was done in late June, which provided them rations for just 1 month.
Baluch says recent armed clashes in Afar region to the east of Tigray have displaced thousands of people, among them about 55,000 Eritrean refugees. He says concerns for their safety also are growing as armed confrontations are taking place near where the refugees live. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Somali boxer Ramla Ali was defeated at the Tokyo Games Monday, but she still made history as the country's first Olympic boxer. Reporter Mohamed Kahiye speaks to Somalia's Boxing Federation and amateur boxers about the significance of Ali stepping into the ring.
Somali female boxer Ramla Ali lost to Romanian Claudia Nachita in the round of 16 at the Olympics Monday, but her performance in the ring excited thousands of Somalis back home. Abdurrahman Ali Mira, chief of Somali Boxing Federation, said upcoming boxers look to Ali as their role model. He said Ramla's representation of Somalia at the Olympics was historic and realized the dreams of boxers following years of hard work and training. He added Ali's experience will motivate upcoming Somali boxers who look up to her and believe in the spirit of flying the flag of Somalia in the international boxing competitions. Hundreds of Somalis posted messages on social media praising her courage of being the first female boxer representing the Horn of African country in the Olympics. Dair Abdile was among hundreds of supporters that watched her fight on the TV in Mogadishu. He says they had high expectations of Ramla's performance in the ring due to the professional training, and despite the defeat, they believe she will perform well in other upcoming events. Boxing is not one of the most popular sports among Somalis, but the few professionals like Omar Abdi Ali, who train outside the country as does Ramla, hope they will follow her footsteps. He says he's proud of Ramla representing Somalia in the ring in Tokyo Monday and hopes to join her in the upcoming boxing competitions while jointly representing their country. Somalia is represented by one other athlete at the Tokyo Games. Sports officials say they are making plans to send more athletes to upcoming Olympics. Mohamed Kaye for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
Rights groups are voicing alarm over a Turkish official's announcement of new legislation and controls on the foreign funding of social media in Turkey. For VOA, Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
A news broadcast from Dokuz 8 Haber. The news portal is one of many that have opened on social media in recent years, offering independent journalism. Like many others, it receives international support. But this month, Thoratan Altun, the head of the Turkish President's Communications Directorate, accused foreign-funded media organizations of acting as a fifth column in Turkey, undermining the government, he claimed, at the bidding of foreign powers. Dokuz 8 chief editor Gürkan Biçici dismisses the allegation, saying the attack is a response to the portal's success in challenging what he says is the government's grip on media.
90% of mainstream media outlets are in control of the government, but they are facing the fact that these media outlets is no more effective to have a control over the public opinion. They want to make legislations that directly targets independent and critical media organizations. They defend these regulations with the thesis of those media outlets are supported by foreign governments to have the support of the society.
Altun, in a statement, said new regulations would be introduced to monitor and control foreign funding of media. The announcement drew swift condemnation from rights groups. This year, the Paris-based group Reporters Without Borders, RSF, ranked Turkey 143 out of 180 countries in terms of media freedoms. The group's Turkey representative, Erol Önderoğlu, says foreign funding plays a key role for independent media because fear of government retribution deters many Turkish citizens and companies from giving financial support.
I'm concerned because it has been always very difficult in Turkey to develop a local system for funding independent journalism project. Many other serious news portals are so dynamic thanks to international donors' contribution. I think the government knows very well where to target.
Turkish officials have also announced they are considering new legislation to punish disseminating so-called fake news on social media. Attila Yeşilada, a political analyst for Global Source Partners, says the threat of new controls coincides with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's mounting political challenges.
The main motivation is Erdogan's approval ratings is dropping as we speak. Erdogan understands that, you know, one of the main pillars of his long reign is his ability to control the news flow to the public. But social media, YouTube, and these alternative media has become the number one news source. And he's getting desperate. We have another COVID wave. I think it has started. And of course, the economy is in a miserable condition.
Turkey is scheduled for both presidential and parliamentary polls in 2023, although some observers see the increasing pressure on independent media as a sign that there could be early elections. But the government insists any new measures are aimed at only protecting the integrity of the media and will conform to international norms. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
At a time of widespread digital insecurity, it turns out that the oldest and simplest computer fix there is, turning a device off, then back on again, can thwart hackers from stealing information from smartphones. The National Security Agency recommends rebooting a phone every week as a way to stop hacking. Almost always in arm's reach, rarely turned off and holding huge stores of personal and sensitive data. Cell phones have become top targets for hackers looking to steal text messages, contacts and photos, as well as track users' locations and even secretly turn on their video and microphones. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer Nadia Taha and our managing editor Kate Pound Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening and have a great evening.